Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjees. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachauri, and I'm the senior mentor of the POP or Protect Our Planet movement, and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.
Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone and to our viewers from Far East. Good night.
Welcome back to week 6 of season 3. And our show is about impact investment. The theme of this season is impact investing, the new normal. Why is it important? We see that impact investing is one of the key triggers to redirect financial and human resources for achieving sustainable development goals defined by United Nations, so we can save our planet for the future generations.
And today we will discuss the global agenda and see if Europe is on the track to achieve the SDGs.
I'm curious to know that.
We will also talk about the future of capitalism and how business and companies can catch up to the sustainable development.
So as our guest is from Netherlands, Ben's homeland, and has political background, so today is basically Ben's show.
Oh, thank you.
And I will only make sure that the audience will understand what the two brilliant minds are discussing and that we don't go too much into politics, please.
Okay, we'll try not to. So before we continue, a quick reminder to you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and not to miss any future episodes, exciting one like today. You can always do it at youtube.com/Swiss Impact.
And also good news for those who want to learn about impact investing and create or transform into profitable business with impact. In the next 4 months from November, we will conduct 4 trainings, advanced trainings, which are already published on chamomile.ch, which are dedicated to the 4 topics. First is impact inclusion and impact measurement. How do you measure impact and incorporate it in your business model? Second is about business development in impact investing sector. The third, how do you find and select good investors in the sector and fundraise successfully? And last but not least, how to pitch and negotiate successfully. So about pitching and negotiation skills. Take the opportunity to learn with us together. Before we invite our guests, Ben, I wanted to ask you to share maybe a little story.
Oh, today we stay, like Svetlana mentioned, to our home. In fact, I'm very, very honored to have one of my very old friend, and he's the former Prime Minister of Netherlands, and he's also an intellectual. So I just want to say with some pride, and I again repeat that Netherlands, being such a tiny little country, in fact, when we were kids, we used to joke that when you look in the world atlas and you try to find Netherlands, you will find the name Amsterdam. And generally, AMS was in Netherlands and the rest of Terdam used to end up in Germany. But still, despite of being so small, Netherlands has been a trendsetter in Europe in the sector of sustainability and impact investment. So with this, I welcome our guest of today. Welcome, His Excellency, Professor Dr. Jan-Peter Balkenende.
Welcome. Welcome.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good to see you, Ben and Svetlana. Yes. I'm here in my hometown, Capelle aan den IJssel. That's a city near Rotterdam, in my study room. So you have the books behind me, but I also see beautiful background with you.
Well, yes. We are kind of on Paradeplatz, you know, in the center of financial sector
of Switzerland.
Beautiful.
So, I'd like to introduce you very briefly to the audience who don't know you, because there might be some people like that. So you are the former Prime Minister of the Netherlands in the years 2002 till 2010. You're also professor at Erasmus University Rotterdam and member of the Club of Madrid. You're also external senior advisor to Ernst & Young, associate partner at Haag Corporate Affairs, and chairman at Dutch Sustainable Growth Coalition, as well as at No Aber Foundation. I don't know if it's like in German, No Aber, so kind of foundation, you know, very strict one, or what
it
is the name?
It's Nober Foundation, and Nober is a Twent dialect. It's a dialect in the Netherlands, and it stands for neighbor.
Okay.
Nober.
Because in German it would be no but, you know. No, no but. No aber.
Oh, but with your turn, that's a nice joke. We have a fantastic young entrepreneur in the Netherlands, and he once said, in the Netherlands, we are used to saying yes but. Yes, yeah. But. And then he developed a chair, and when you sit in that chair and you are using the wording yes, but then you get an electric shock. Isn't that funny? Dan Rozengaard, great man. Dan Rozengaard.
I love that. It's awesome. You know, for impact investors, when project pitch to them and then they said, yeah, you have a good project, but, you know, then they could get electric shock.
Exactly.
It would work, you know, to get more capital into impact investors.
Before I wanted to start today, Jan Peter, I just wanted to ask a question, which is a bit different than our normal start. I just got back a few hours back from Netherlands. I had a 2-day trip with my son to show him his country. And he asked a question, which I think you may be the right person to answer, that we went from Switzerland and we were so amazed how clean is Netherlands and the infrastructure and everything is so amazingly good. But still, the prices are cheap, affordable, and people are extremely environmental conscious. So what do you personally think that today in the world of these turbulent days of globalization, competition, and everything, how come Netherlands is doing so well?
Well, I think you can say that the Netherlands is a well-organized country. You can see it, and when you're flying above the Netherlands, you can see how everything has been arranged. I think we have a good infrastructure. The quality of roads are really okay. We invest in renovating houses. There are new building projects. That's all true. And we are aware of the fact that we have to take care for the environment. Maybe it has to do with our past. You know, in 1953, we had a terrible water flood. More than 1,800 people died because of the water flood. I also lost family members. So we know that you have to act. You cannot wait. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we are convinced that we have to do things in the right way, organize your society in the right way. It's a matter of good governance. So you can find it all. That does not mean that not everyone is happy with everything. Of course, people are always complaining. That's also part of Dutch society. And we complain about The Hague, we complain about the weather, but still everyone is happy with the country. That's true.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So,
Jan-Peter, please tell us a bit more about yourself, because I really gave a very brief introduction, and especially what I didn't say. What are your activities of the organization you represent today?
Yeah, my life is in effect a bit threefold. When we talk about innovation, usually we use the wording triple helix. And triple helix means a cooperation between the government, the knowledge centers like universities, and businesses. But in fact, that's also a bit my life. So I have a background in the academic world. I did my PhD thesis on government regulation and civil society organizations. I worked at the think tank of my political party. I've written a lot of reports. It was a great time. I became a member of parliament. I became prime minister. So academia, PhD, I became professor at a young age, politics. And after my time as prime minister, I had an upgrade in my life. Then I went to the business sector. And I became partner. I became partner at EY at Ernst & Young, and that was a fantastic role because the company said we want to focus more on corporate responsibility. How can you integrate sustainability into business models, for example? So then I went to that company. And when I worked at EY, then I had a meeting with Paul Polman. Of course, you know him, the former CEO of Unilever. And he said, it's remarkable that so many companies are high on, Dutch companies are high on the Dow Jones Sustainability Index. Why should we join forces? And that led to the initiative of the Dutch Sustainable Growth Coalition. Eight companies working on sustainability issues. So EY is one, DSCC is one. I'm also involved in societal initiatives. Now I stopped with responsibility for the major alliance, and we tried to bring together the world of government, the civil society organizations, and businesses to do right things for society. The Norber Foundation, you mentioned with the difficult name, that is about health, innovation, and lifestyle. So that's the role. I started with Hague Corporate Affairs, and especially I'm involved in the office in Brussels, and that's about giving advice to companies about what's happening, what about transitions in society, energy transition, for example. So I give them advice. You mentioned also the Club de Madrid, World Leadership Alliance. That's an organization of former heads of government. And we are very active. We talk about the multilateral organizations. We talk about democracy, about freedom, about SDGs. So, in fact, I have different roles, but in the common elements are always about geopolitical affairs, the future of Europe, sustainability, the SDGs, the circular economy. So I must say I'm happy with my life, and I discovered there's also a life after politics.
That sounds amazing. Thanks. This is the most great thing when people can do what they love, right? Then they become successful.
Oh, you're so right. It's always about passion. It counts for everyone. If you can do your work or your activities with passion, that really helps. It counts for people in art or in sports or in the business sector or in academia. Passion is always key.
So we wanted to start today with the global agenda.
Finally.
This was a long introduction.
Yeah. So we have the United Nations SDGs, which are covering, in my opinion, a lot of existential topics like the climate change, biodiversity, and also you also mentioned it, that it's also very deeply connected to inequality. Yeah. But this has clear deadlines, and individual countries have to plan them and implement them with strategies. So what is your opinion? Are we on track in Europe?
Yeah, I think this is the key question, Ben. This is really very important. I'm a big defender of the SDGs because this is about quality of life. Leave no one behind. Fantastic goals about combating poverty, hunger, responsible consumption and production, a good life in cities, education. It's all in. That's really great. But the only thing is, are we able to reach the goals? And that's exactly your question. Are we on track? If you make an analysis of what's happening in the world, then you can see that Europe is a front runner. That's what you can see. But if you ask the questions, are we on track? Then the answer is no at the moment. We have too much more. And of course, it's not so easy. Before we had the SDGs, we had the Millennium Development Goals. You know them, but these were goals. They were meant for the developing countries. It was a 15-year program, and after 15 years, in the year 2015, people said we were able to reach 70 or 80% of those goals. So it has been a successful set of goals. Now the SDGs, that's not only for the developing countries, it's for the whole world. And it's all about the question, are we able to realize the goals in 2030? When we met, Ben, last year, before we had the corona difficulties, we met in Switzerland. And then, I attended the conference about the question, what about the implementation of the SDGs in the southern part of the world, parts of Asia, Africa, and South America? And then the question, we are not on track at the moment. And I think Europe is making progress, but still, we have to much more to realize the goals. In Germany, you have the Bertelsmann Foundation, Bertelsmann Stiftung, and they are comparing countries in their performance regarding the SDGs. So you can see there is the awareness. We are making progress, but we have to do more. That's the reality at the moment.
Thank you.
Jan-Peter, I have another challenging question, at least for me, it is challenging. So as you know, that despite of Sir David Attenborough has been warning for more than six decades, or IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, has been warning since nearly three decades. The multitude of treaties that have been signed is enormous. commitments made, but the impact on the ground level has been still very little, completely negligible, right? So in fact, the current exploitation of planetary resources and emissions of CO2 are just going on the normal speed or even rising, or Ben would say they're increasing, right? So yeah, we are hearing a lot of depression among young people and desperation among scientists at the speed the global leadership is working. So they are too slow, way too slow. Yeah. What do you, member of the global leadership, think is the cause of this disconnection between the urgency of the situation we are all in and the speed of decision-making by leaders? What can we do about it?
These are great remarks you're making now. It reminds me of time when I was prime minister. I was invited to introduce Al Gore with his film, An Inconvenient Truth.
Yeah.
And of course, you remember that film.
It was
2006, 2007. And that was in fact only about awareness. What is happening in the world? You can see the changes, and his message was, we cannot wait. I think since then, things have changed. The awareness really has increased. And today, more and more, we see the results. You can see the unpredictability in nature. You see the risk in nature everywhere. You can see that there are extremes in the weather. So I think the awareness has increased, and that's one. And the second point is, I think it's also the conviction is getting more and more on the table. We cannot wait. We have to act. That's what you can see. And I think this is necessary. What you also can see, and especially what you've said, the young generation is concerned because this is about their future. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of now being honest. Where are we now? What have we promised? Your point. And how can we make progress? And I think that I attended the climate summit in Copenhagen in 2009. And you remember that was not a success. And how come? Mm-hmm. For example, President Obama and the Prime Minister of China, they both said, no binding international agreements. Europe was playing another role, but in any case, there was not a willingness to have international binding agreements. And it was the disappointment of Copenhagen. In 2015, in Paris, the situation was different. In any case, people agreed on the fact that we have to bring down the increase of temperature worldwide. So that was an advantage. Also, another one was that people said in Paris, every 5 years, countries have to report on the progress they're making and realizing the reduction of CO2 emissions. That helps. So I think things are changing, but if you are measuring, we are not there. Another thing is that people are also convinced that we are running out of time. We cannot wait. Yeah. And therefore, suddenly you can see that countries are giving agreements, commitments to, let's say, we should be carbon neutral in 2050, like Australia, Japan, Korea, yeah, 2060, what China said. So America, you know, President Trump left the Paris Agreement, but fortunately that has changed. So you can see that more and more the statements are okay. But, and that's your point, you can have the best statements, you can have the best declarations, but the question is, do we take the right actions on the one hand, and are we able to measure the progress we're making? So it depends really on actions and measurements. This is really key.
Mm-hmm. So do we make this progress or not? Like if you say, if it was in 2015, right? Last year, countries were supposed to report on the progress of CO2 emissions reduction. Do you know any numbers, maybe, or which country made the progress?
I have many books behind me. Then I have to very precise. If do that, but you can, in any case, see that you can see clear examples. Companies are really busy with the discussion around CO2 emissions. How can we reduce that? You can see that there is discussion about which type of energy do we use? How can we make progress in the energy transition? In fact, you can find those discussions everywhere. You also can see that schools, universities are taking up their responsibilities regarding these items. So worldwide, you can see the awareness has really increased, and there are also already concrete steps. But much more has to be done. That's the reality.
Okay, thank you, Jan Peter. I think we change to the next big topic of today. What is the possible future of capitalism in Europe? And so, you lead, please.
So you know better than most people in the world that the present form of capitalism has been one of the main causes, global causes we are facing, whether it is climate change, inequality. So the present form has limited future. So what, in your opinion, is the possible future of capitalism, especially in Europe?
Yeah, that's a great question. Ben and Svetlana, have you heard about the book written by Michel Albert? He was an insurance man, but also a thinker. And he wrote in 1991 the book Capitalism Against Capitalism, Capitalism Contra Capitalism. Oh, that was a very interesting book. And what was the analysis of Michel Albert? He said, in fact, we have seen that the old struggle, the battle between two varieties of economic thinking has changed completely. Mm-hmm. Initially, you had the struggle, the battle between communism and capitalism. But after the end of communism in Europe, maybe in other some parts of the world, the battle is over. But then he said we can see the development of a new battle between two varieties of capitalism. And he analyzed, there are, in 1991, there are two types of capitalism. The one is the Anglo-Saxon variant. That has to do with focus on economic growth, short-term revenues, not much eye for solidarity and those notions, sometimes criticism regarding the governments, this type of capitalism, Anglo-Saxon capitalism. And he said the opposite is what he called Rhinelandic capitalism. Rhinelandic capitalism has to do with more long-term thinking, cooperation between the government and the social partners, the organization, employees, and employees, a more eye for solidarity, more public facilities, a bigger role of the government. And then his analysis was the following. He said, in fact, Rhinelandic economies are superior, Rhinelandic companies are superior, but people will choose for the Anglo-Saxon variety. And why? Making profit in the short run is more exciting, is sexier. That was his analysis in 1991. I must say, I had to think about that analysis when we had the financial crisis in 2008-2009. And the question is indeed, which type of capitalism should we prefer? And if you are talking about the European context, of course, there is a heritage of the social market economy developed in Germany. We have the Rhinelandic thinking. You can see the Scandinavian countries. So you must be aware of the history. And it's my conviction that if you want to have a good society for all, if you want to have to play a good role regarding inequality issues, how to combat it, I think the Rhinelandic thinking, the concept of social and ecological market economy is preferable. And at this moment, worldwide, you can see a debate on which type of capitalism should there be. In any case, in the European context, I would say, think about your roots. Capitalism has really generated profits, creativity, innovation. In the 19th century, we saw the Industrial Revolution that was also connected with capitalism, but also it led to a huge social issue. So that was the tension between, let's say, capitalism on the one hand and the big social issue of those days on the other hand. We had a terrible crisis in the 30s. We had some world wars. And after the Second World War, we had John Maynard Keynes. He already said we must have another type of thinking. In the UK, you had the committee of Lord Beveridge. In the Netherlands, committee of Van Rijn. So it was all about which type of society should we have. So after the Second World War, it was more the concept of the social market economy, the welfare state, and so on. Later on, we discovered that you also can expect too much from the state. That's the discussion we had in the 70s in the Netherlands. And in the 80s, then suddenly we got another attitude. We had Reagan and Thatcher, and they said the government is not the solution, the government is the problem. and then we got the focus on shareholders and the neoclassical economy, the supplies economics. And I think now it's more balanced approach. In fact, we are talking about other varieties of capitalism. And of course, you are in Switzerland. You have the World Economic Forum over there. And during the last episode of the World Economic Forum, it was all about stakeholder capitalism. So you can see the change in the wording. And that's what you can see at this moment, the rethink capitalism. At this moment, I'm busy with a professor at the Free University, Govert Buijs, and a lot of others, on a project about the future of market economies in Europe for future generations. And it's all a matter of rethinking our economy. And what about the interests of the future of the people also in the future? And it was a very interesting project. We started with a debate between Joseph Stiglitz, the Nobel Prize winner, and Herman Van Rompuy, the former president of the European Council. And we had lots of economists. We had reports from young economists. We have an essay contest for among students. So we have a lot of stuff we can use for our report. And I hope that the end of this year, probably beginning of next year, we'll write the report. We'll publish the report. It's all about rethinking our economy. And this is what you can see at this moment worldwide. So in Europe, we should think about the roots of our societies and our economies, about the fundamental aspects. What are the moral elements of your economies? This is really key. But also, which is the discussion at the moment? And I mentioned already stakeholder capitalism. That has been mentioned by the World Economic Forum. And that means it's not only about the interests of shareholders, it is and shareholders, and your employees, and the clients, and society at large. That's another concept. Sometimes I'm involved in the work of the Co-Round Table for Moral Capitalism. Moral Capitalism, an organization that exists for I think, already 50 years, but it's always about how can you get the right connection between morality and the economy. We talk about conscious capitalism. Rishi Sisodia, for example, a professor from the United States, and others have that movement, conscious capitalism. I listened to a professor from France. He wrote a report about responsible capitalism. We talk about inclusive capitalism. Also, the Vatican, the Pope, he's talking about this type of views on the economy. So you can see there are really changes. And of course, there are different approaches. But there are some common elements. The first is it's much more about long-term thinking. The second is it's not only about the shareholder, but about all the stakeholders. And the third one is you must have the right balance between economic, social, and ecological aspects. And I'm happy with those developments. So this is what you can see at the moment. And I'm happy with, let's say, the rethinking the economies we have, because if we would go on with the, let's say, the traditional, more Anglo-Saxon-oriented variant of capitalism, will that lead to a good future? And I must have serious doubts about that.
It's, then I just wanted to play a little bit of devil's advocate on the thing which you mentioned just now, that wasn't the evolution of capitalism, for example, predictable? Because when trade and industries are controlled, I mean, the definition, official definition is that trade and industries are controlled by private owners for profit. The distribution of profit is left unchecked, and we end up in a sort of shareholder economy, where the lion part of the profit is concentrated to a small group of shareholders, instead of, like you yourself mentioned, employees, customers, and society and other essential stakeholders. And I know that, like one of our common acquaintance, President Obama, he also tried to use Keynes theory to set up internal check systems in the capitalist system, but he failed. Also because of his senator system. So and what you mentioned is correct. We have now the moral capitalism, conscious capitalism, and Vatican has come forward also with the inclusive capitalism. And what, in your personal opinion, do you think would be the right? I mean, you mentioned yourself that we are working at it, but which one would be the more movement? You think?
The discussion you're mentioning now is, of course, a long discussion. I remember Max Weber, the famous sociologist, he already spoke about the spirit of capitalism and the Protestant ethics, for example. I remember, of course, Adam Smith is important because he spoke about the invisible hand in the economy. That was, in fact, the message of his book, The Wealth of Nations. But we've forgotten something. And you know the story. Before he wrote The Wealth of Nations, he wrote another book with, and the title was The Theory of Moral Sentiments. And for Adam Smith, there was a clear connection between the invisible hand and morality. And I think what we've learned in the past is that there is a disconnect between morality and economic behavior. And then you get these developments of, let's say, only capital has to say everything. And then you see that there is an unbalance between, let's say, the interests of the shareholders and the workers, for example. So in today's world, you can see that we get another type of discussion. Let me go back to 2019. There was a statement of the Business Roundtable in the United States, and it attracted a lot of attention. The title was Statement on the Purpose of a Corporation. I think it was a good declaration. It was a bit in line with what we are discussing now. Let's let more the stakeholder approach. And the message of those 181 CEOs was, We always focused on the role of shareholders. Now it is about the stakeholder. But now you can see the discussion. You have had a very good statement. But what about the reality? What has changed? Do we see changes in the way you're reporting about your activities? Are you really choosing for integrated reporting? What about the social and ecological criteria? So this is what we have to do. It must be an honest story. And therefore, Ben, it's good that you are the devil's advocate, because we need more clarity in these domains. We must have an honest approach. And therefore, I'm really convinced we cannot wait. We have to change things. And we've seen that sometimes we go from one extreme to the other. We've had the Industrial Revolution, and it led to a lot of advantages, but also big societal issues. The reaction was communism and capitalism, but we've seen also the result in those countries. So it always would be kind of balance, a balance between rich and poor, a balance between old and young, a balance between the economy, the social and ecological dimensions. You must always have that kind of balance. And therefore, we must be very critical regarding the question, what are we doing? And therefore, I think there's a clear connection between the first item we discussed, the Sustainable Development Goals, and the way how you're organizing economies. There's a clear connection between those elements. I think this is really what we should do. And if we are honest about which type of society and which type of economy do we want, then you can use the SDGs, but also an encyclical of the Pope like Laudato Si, as a source of inspiration, as a kind of guideline we need now. And that's what we have to do. That's my conviction.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peter. It was very interesting. I think our audience learned a lot also.
No, listen, let me add something. It's also important that, let's say, within the whole business sector, you need each other. That's the reason why we founded the Dutch Sustainable Growth Coalition. You have many more, UN Global Compact. You have a lot of business associations. It's so important that you keep up the discussion the right way and do the right things. So therefore, it's good that you have codes within sectors, that you have cross-sector forms of cooperation. You must invest in the stakeholder dialogue. That's very important. Talk with people from universities, with NGOs. Have discussions with civil servants and politicians. But it's so essential that you have that long-term focus and that you say we have a fantastic set of goals, but we have to act now. And I think it's possible to change. Let me give a concrete Dutch example. I attended a meeting at the University of Applied Science in Tilburg, in the southern part of the country. And then the president of the university said, I think we should integrate SDGs into our curricula. Mm-hmm. And then he said, please give a speech for our students about SDGs and come back after 6 or 7 months. And I came back to that university. And then I discovered that so many students, they were creative. They were first had to learn about SDGs. And then the assignment was you should develop an idea for a product or a service that is in line with the SDGs. It was fantastic to see the creativity among all those students. And now this was not only one university, all the University of Applied Sciences have taken up that approach. I think this is fantastic. You can change, but that means you have to act. And therefore, if businesses are saying, we want to choose for SDGs, okay, talk about it. Where are you standing now? But also, how can you rethink your business model, your KPIs, and be honest about the results? And that is, of course, the world of the integrated reporting and take seriously the ESG criteria. So it is possible to change, but you have to act.
Yeah. Jan Peter, this is an awesome example. I mean, this is what we strive for, that also here in Switzerland and other European countries internationally, that SDGs and impact investing would be known at the universities. You know, it's for their future. So I would love actually to connect with that university and have a chat. How did they do that? They must be very flexible in terms of action, because usually universities are quite bureaucratic, you know, as well, and it's not that easy.
I think you're talking about Switzerland. I think Netherlands is a bit more relaxed.
Anyway, I'd love to chat with you about that topic. But you were mentioning also about the companies, right? So they are part of the ecosystem, and this is our next section. How will companies and businesses catch up on SDGs? Actually, when we had Mr. Lawrence Lee from Hong Kong, who is the head of financial services there, in our previous show, he mentioned very interesting example. He said that while in Western world, often the climate action related regulations and laws are being made by politicians and financial leaders, in Asia, they invite or they have a space also for the third party at the table who are business heads, right? And because without them, all plans are doomed to fail as they have to implement it and they must be aware of all possibilities how to do that. Is that true that Europe is also working at including such third pillar for businesses as well? Because otherwise, how on earth businesses are going to catch up with the new planning and implement all the regulations which is coming up? Yeah. What do you think? Is it true?
Yeah, let's say if the when you talk about the responsibility of companies and the business sector, it should start with your own conviction. Because mm-hmm. if you are saying, well, we are acting in line with regulation of the government, then it's a matter of compliance. Then you are obeying the rules of the game. But if you talk about sustainable business practices, it should start with your own conviction. How can I contribute as a businessman or businesswoman to a better world? So it starts with reflecting. It's a matter mm-hmm. of honesty. Where are we standing now? Can we be happy with our performance? Can we be happy with our results? And if you are honest, then you will say, no, we have to change things. That's one. Mm-hmm. The second point is, it's all also about creativity. Let me give an example about Japan. This year, I already participated in 3 online sessions and it was all about the circular economy. And they discovered that the Netherlands is active in this field. So they asked me, can you tell a bit about what has happened in the Netherlands? What about the government policy? What about businesses? And can we learn from each other? And it was a fantastic discussion we had. Also, the Minister of Environment, Mr. Koizumi, was active in discussion, the top leaders. And it had to do with the fact that also a country like Japan is thinking in terms of how can we do things in a better way. This has to do with ethical reasons, because you have to rethink the use of resources, but also it has to do with business-wise mm-hmm. approaches, because if you're not choosing for sustainability, you will be the loser in the longer run. And I also noticed that in Singapore, already years and years ago, I was invited to come to Singapore to talk about SDGs and talk with a lot of business people, and you can see it's high on the agenda. So if you talk about how can we change things, it's a matter of you need the governments, of course. You need the knowledge centers, you need the NGOs, and you need the business sector. And mm-hmm. the good thing of the SDGs is that, in fact, it combines everything. It has also to do with a kind of inclusive way of thinking. And let me refer to a book I like very much. And Ben, you know that I've mentioned that book many, many times. It's called Why Nations Fail. And it's written by 2 professors, one from Harvard and one from MIT, Atsumoke and Robinson. And this beautiful book is about 3,000 years world history on one question: under which conditions can countries be successful or not? Mm-hmm. And after their analysis, they said, in fact, there are 3 important components. One, you always must have innovation. If you think we're doing the right things, and when you do not innovate, you will mm-hmm. can forget it in the longer run. The second criterion is you must have the rule of law. It has no use to make profit if you are working in a corrupt environment, for example. So you must have a good legal system, the rule of law. And then the third element is, it's all about inclusive institutions. People must be able to share in the revenues of economic well-being, so that not only the elites can take benefit of the economic revenues, for example. And I think these are very important lessons. And the question is, do you want to be in line with this type of approach or not? Are you in line with the SDGs and are you willing to contribute to these higher goals? And I think this is the key element. And therefore, we also need countervailing powers. You must be critical. And therefore, I'm a big defender of the stakeholder approach. If a company says, yes, we want to be a sustainable company, invite others to talk about your results. Let me give an example, Unilever. They have a sustainability policy that's called Sustainable Living Plan. And every year they have an event and they invite government officials, people, universities, NGOs and other businesses to have a common reflection on the way they're performing. I think this is good. We have a company called DSM. In the annual report, you will also find a paragraph about what went wrong. Where did we fail? Mm-hmm. I think then you are in control. So there are many of these examples that can be helpful to make progress.
This is very good that they started to do something like that, because usually when you read impact reports, everything is so pink and fantastic. We created such a positive impact, right? So that's a good point, to be honest and to share what went wrong, right?
Yeah, for every company, it's not so easy to say, oh, well, yes, we are aligned with SDG number 5 or 7 or 8 or whatever.
Yeah.
That's, of course, you can do that. But the key question is, what is really changing and how are you performing? I think it's fun to realize that it will strengthen your profile. I see a lot of companies that are performing in a fantastic way, and you can feel that people are proud. Let me give an example of a company Van Oort. It's a dredging company. They are creating artificial isles. And they notice that if you want to attract young people, they are asking, what are you doing? How is your performance regarding the SDGs? And I think it's interesting to see how young people are performing, and companies can take benefit of the knowledge within their own organization. So it's all about creativity and innovation.
Hmm, perfect. Mm-hmm. And as usual, I come always with the serious questions. So, for example, the financial regulations. It's still happening. That I was reading one of the reports, one of the newspapers in Holland a few weeks or I think a couple of months back, that major Dutch pension funds are still investing in large multinationals like JBS, Minerva, which are largely responsible for the deforestation of Amazon. So what is your opinion on it? Can't this issue be resolved? I mean, is one way to resolve this issue is by combing through all the existing laws and regulations of the Dutch financial system? Or how can we protect it or promote it that even pension funds and the big financial institutions do watch out where they're investing?
Yeah, this is a key question regarding the financial sector. You can see that within the financial sector, it's more about ESG, ecology, social, and governance. It's more about what are our priorities. And you can see a lot of critical debates about that. So at this moment, you already have 10. If you invest, for example, in the weapon industry, you can forget it. Or when you are in cigarettes and cigars, you can forget it. So that's already clear. Then you have a kind of gray zone. So you can invest, let's say, in energy companies. And the question is, of course, are these companies willing also to be part of the process of transition? So, and then you get discussions, what shall we do? And that's the reason why we have a lively debate also among the pension funds about what are our strategies. You can see that a lot of things are changing in the financial industry. For example, the central banks are more and more active in the world of climate change, to give one example. And they also underline the fact that if you're not taking up your responsibility, it's a dangerous affair. And therefore, banks are confronted with criteria from the central banks. What are you doing? What's your performance regarding sustainability components? And that's good. So in the financial industry, you can see that this discussion is higher and higher on the agenda. It's also supported by, let's say, what's happening in societies, the criticism, the views of people. But also you can see more and more legal cases. We have had some important cases in the Netherlands, as you know, and also yesterday in France was also a legal case. So in many domains, you can see there are a lot of discussions. And if you are not able to give the right answers to these questions, then you will be confronted with difficulties. You can see that.
Mm-hmm. Jan-Peter, another question, because, you know, money is always the key here, you know, and we hear a lot that many resources, monetary resources, are allocated to climate-related projects, to SDGs action. Yep. And these are huge amounts, billions and trillions. On the other hand, we also, because we work also with projects and which have amazing technologies, innovation, but however, they are struggling to get the funds, to get funded. So they are severely cash starved and often ending up moving to US or selling their inventions to Chinese to get cash, right? So what do you think are the causes for that, and how can we change this situation? Because EU has the money as well to support locally the innovative projects which create impact.
I mean, I also know about some from TU Delft. They are doing amazing innovative projects. but yep. they're all kind of dying at the childhood phase because of the cash starvation.
Yeah, the cash starvation. I think your questions are really key. Let me give a concrete example. In time when I was a member of the supervisory board of ING, I've done it for 4 years. Very interesting at time. What you can see is that on the one hand, banks are talking about how can we contribute to a better world, to more sustainability? How can we talk with clients about that CO2 emission reduction? It's all there. So there's one reality. Also, banks are taking up their responsibility. But at the same moment, you can see that every quarter of the year, it's about business results. And then suddenly it's about profit. It's about cost-saving measures. It's about turnover and so on. So sometimes there seems to be a gap between the financial criteria, making money, especially also in the short run, and the bigger societal goals. And I think when we talk about the assessment of business results, this should change. If we're only focusing on making money in the short run without taking into account or not taking into account enough the sustainability components, then I think we're measuring not in the right way. Feke Sibesma, the CEO of the DSM company, he said many times, you never can be successful in a world that fails. And I agree with him. I agree with him. So if what's the use of making profits in the short run when you can see that the air is polluted, when you have bad societal circumstances, mm-hmm. when you have not the right approach towards your own employees, this you cannot be happy with such a world. So therefore, I think the techniques of measurement this result should change, not only focusing on the short-term financial results, but also about the questions about what about long-term value creation? What does it mean for you? How are you performing? There must be a balance between ecological, economic, and social aspects. And if not, then we are not measuring in the right way. And I think people do understand this. And that's the reason why also in the academic world, people are saying we have to rethink our views. We have to rethink our methods and techniques. And you can change things. Let me give an example of the world of EY and the big four, the auditors. You also know Peter Bakker. He's a Dutchman. He was the former CEO of TNT, and now he's the president of the World Business Council for Sustainable Development. And once he gave an interview, and the title of the interview was Accountants Will Save the World. Isn't that funny? So we thought, well, that's a nice title. But in fact, it was not so much about accountants. It was about the following. If you say, we want to be a sustainable company, then the question is, what does it really mean? And what have you achieved? What were your KPIs? And then it's a matter of honesty. And if you have the power to let an external actor, like an auditor, let check your societal performance, then it's an honest story. And I think if you talk about the issues of today, and if you say, yes, we're in line with the SDGs, but it's only about cash, sorry, that's not the right way. And we must be very honest about it. And I think we have such a fantastic set of goals. And therefore, I think the SDGs can be a source of cooperation, of the willingness to work together, because you have a common ground to act. I'm wearing the pin, and Svetlana, you have the same. Ben, now I'm the devil's advocate. Why don't you have such a pin?
I have it. I just forgot to put it on.
I gave you that one.
but if you let's say we want to be in line with the SDGs, then suddenly you get another type of discussion. You can say, what is your business model? What are you doing? What can we learn from each other? You must have a kind of common agenda, and also you must have common tools to measure the progress you're making. And I think this is what we should do in the world of today. Not waiting, but acting. And let's say if it's only a matter of having the nice story around the SDGs, if you say, yes, we are in line with the SDGs, we do so much, but if you're not willing to report about the concrete results, then it's not the right story. And especially in the financial industry, because you're right, it's always about the financial elements. If the financial industry would take up its responsibility, then it's indeed about which type of investments should we realize. What about the business results? What about quarter reporting? Not only about the financial results, but also about the societal elements. Mm-hmm. I think these things are really key. And I hope that we can make progress, and we cannot wait. And that's a bit my concern. If we would continue to act in a traditional way, we will not make progress enough. And therefore, it's so correct and good that we say, when we talk about SDGs, are we on track? This is, in fact, the key question, also for the financial sector.
Jan Peter, but I think we are again here coming into consciousness shift or mindfulness also. And like when you report only about financials and you suddenly start reporting also about SDGs and impact, which has enormous value. So then financial results must be as valuable as impact results, meaning that people need to understand that it has also monetary value behind, right? If you destroy forests or Amazon, whatever you are destroying, in the long term, you are going to pay for that much more than you might saving, if right? So then we are coming to that point again.
You're completely right. The longer you wait, the higher the price will be in the future.
Yep.
That's for sure. And that means that if you're not taking your responsibility now, that means it will let a huge burden for next generations. Mm-hmm. And are you happy with that? Nobody can happy with that. And that's the responsibility of people who have powers at this moment. You have to act. You cannot wait. That's true. And I think it is possible to do things in another way, but you must have the willingness to do it.
Exactly.
We are also action-oriented, so completely aligned with your vision.
Exactly. And I again come with a gloomy question. So I'm also in the board of the CLC, the Climate Leadership Coalition, and we were having a meeting I think last week or 2 weeks ago, and the scientists from the Stockholm Resilience Institute and a couple of other scientists, they presented their studies, and they said that the two conclusions which really made me worried. One is that more than $4 trillion have been put aside for the COVID pandemic. It has all the governments around the world has put aside a lot of money to fight the COVID pandemic. But there are two issues with that. Firstly, despite, many governments, including the Europeans and Americans, everybody said that all the money or most of the money we are putting aside for COVID pandemic will go for green, the economy development, other environmental development, everything. But in reality, the scientists noticed that less than 2% or around 2% really went into green. 98% went in traditional. That's one point. And second point, they said that all the commitments and the promises were made that this money which we have put aside for the COVID pandemic will be used to create a new sustainable circular economy based and economy. But then in reality, it turns out that the governments are more focused on getting things back to where it was. So the question will be, does that mean that our leaders have learned nothing from this pandemic?
Well, let me go back to a meeting I had last year with a lot of high-ranked civil servants from the Netherlands. And then I was there in my capacity as president, as chairman of the Dutch Sustainable Growth Coalition. And then we discussed the issue. You can see the COVID-19 crisis. We also have to stimulate the economy. What can we do about it? And then the message, and that we have written that down in the Green Recovery Business Statement. We delivered that statement last year. And the message was, if you are stimulating the economy, lay a connection with the Green Deal. If you want to stimulate the economy, lay a connection with the Paris Agreement or the circular economy. Because if you're spending money now, then you have a chance. But if you are using this time only to stimulate the economy in the old-fashioned way and not taking up responsibility for the new realities and the new world, then you are missing opportunities. That's, in fact, the element. And therefore, your remark is really important that if you take seriously the Paris Agreement on climate change, if you take seriously the SDGs, you also must rethink the process of stimulating the economy. And therefore, also heads of government, civil servants have a big responsibility. It is possible to change things now. So you make a critical comment. That's correct. But I recently I had a meeting with people in Greece, an online meeting, of course, because we cannot travel. But then I learned a lot about their intention, what they are going to do. So you can see there are changes at the moment. And maybe that's the advantage of the SDGs. You have a common nominator at the moment, just to say, what are you doing? What are you performing? Mm-hmm. But also, we must be very critical regarding money spent on the economy. Because if we have not learned the lessons from the past, if we not take the right responsibilities for today and tomorrow, then we get difficulties. And we cannot do that towards the new the young generations.
Yeah.
I think the time is running out. Brilliant minds. So it was such a fantastic show, but we still have one thing to ask you, Jan-Peter. Please share any call to action for our global audience. What would you like to say?
Well, what key is for everyone is think about your own responsibility. How can I, in my capacity as business leader or whatever, how can I contribute to the new realities? What I'm doing now, and am I happy with it, or should I rethink my own responsibility? There it starts. And it is possible to change the world. I listened to a professor from INSEAD quite recently in the Netherlands, and he said, if you talk about the economy, you see the changes. It's from output to outcome. Output has to do with the figures, the growth figures and so on, but outcome has to do with societal results. He said, we are now always focusing on minimum means, less lower cost, less investments. No, it should be minimum harm. And then he said, it's always about competence, but it should be more about character, care, commitment, as he said. And I think it's important to rethink your own responsibility, and it counts for government leaders. And Ben, you're so right. If you are spending money on the economy to stimulate the economy, and you do the things not in the right way, then you fail as a politician. If you are active in academic world and you teach the things in the old-fashioned way, and you are not taking new responsibilities and not integrating new views on and educational programs and research programs, then you fail. If a business leader is just sticking to the old reality, then you fail. And we must have a world in which we will not fail. I mentioned the book, Why Nations Fail. I think it's our obligation to take care for a situation that we are contributing to a better world in which no one should be left behind.
Thank you.
It's amazing. Fantastic.
It's always an honor talking to you. And I, you know, 20 years further down the drain, I had told you earlier also, I was in the wrong party. I think now I would have been in your party. I would have voted for you.
Don't repeat that, Ben.
Please don't quote me.
I will do that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us today, Jan-Peter. Thanks a lot.
It was an honor to be with you. And I also want to thank you because you are really analyzing, describing what's happening in the world. You give room for reflection. And I think this is really neat. So also you are contributing to a better world. Thanks for that.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, dear viewers, with this, our show for today, the sixth episode of season 3 ends. If you like it, please subscribe on our YouTube channel. And next week we have, again, an amazing show.
Yeah, exactly, because we will have one of the impact funds from Liechtenstein who are implementing and investing in impactful businesses and projects, which we discuss or talk about in our programs.
And to all SMEs, join our next courses. As I said, next 4 months, it's just about learning, implementing, and action. Thanks for watching us today. Act for your future.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Welcome to Season 3 of Swiss Impact with Banerjee's. I'm Sveta.
And I'm Ben.
The topic of Season 3 is Impact Investing, the New Normal. Do you also want to do something meaningful for our planet and people or invest with impact?
Then our amazing and powerful guests who are business owners, heads of financial institutions, thought leaders, political leaders, policymakers, investors, and experts.
Greetings, my name is Ash Bachori and I'm the senior mentor of the POP or Protect Our Planet movement and also a member of the board and secretary treasurer of the World Sustainable Development Forum. Our primary goal is to mobilize the 1.8 billion youth of the world to urgently address the issue of climate change and take action to protect our planet.
This will inspire you to get engaged.
And in this season, we will challenge them even more to take actions towards sustainable development goals, to enable paradigm shift in the financial sector and way of doing business.
Watch and learn how can we, as humans, transform into eco-financial system which would serve all people and the environment.
We aim for impact investment to become available to anyone, become truly mainstream.
See you every Friday at 3 p.m. Central European Time at Swiss Impact with Banerjee.
Act for your future.